Chapter 9. "You're sure we should be doing this?" Nine asks me. "We don't have a choice." The two of us walk down one of Patience Creek's many nondescript hallways. While the military presence has most of these hallways humming with activity as they get their operation running, this part of the facility has been left pretty much alone. We're in a small section that was built to hold prisoners. And at the moment, we've only got one of those.
"All these new guard popping up around the world, you'd think one of them would have the flying legacy," Nine says.
"Maybe one of them does," I reply. "But we don't have the time to find them."
All right,"
Nine finally concedes, shaking his head.
"Just let it be known, for the record, I'm against this."
"Yeah, I get that. He put a signpost through his chest just a couple days ago."
"Ah, that's a nice memory."
"Your reservations are clear."
"I'll kill him if he tries anything."
I glance at Nine.
"I know.
Why do you think I made you come along?" Nine and I stop talking when we reach the padded room where we're holding Five. The reinforced steel door only is a small porthole for a window and opens with a heavy-duty wheel like you might find in a bank vault or on a submarine. There are two guards posted in front, grim-looking Marines, clutching automatic assault rifles that wouldn't do them a bit of good if Five managed to break out. They both look surprised to see us.
"I need him,"
I say to the guards, nodding towards the locked door. They exchange a look.
"He's a prisoner,"
one of them says.
"I know. He's our prisoner," I reply.
"We are definitely not planning to let him loose,"
Nine adds. One of the guards steps aside and mutters something into a walkie-talkie. I let this all play out. Might as well make it look like I respect Lawson's authority here. The guard returns, shrugs his shoulders, and produces a keyring.
"The general would like you to come see him on another matter,"
the guard tells me as he unlocks a mechanism that holds a three-prong wheel in place.
"Oh, you're in trouble,"
Nine says.
"You can tell him I'll catch up with him as soon as we're done here," I reply to the Marine.
I figure word has reached Lawson that Six and the others left the base without notifying him. I've got no intention of wasting my time explaining our moves to the general. If he wants an update, he can come find me. I've got things to do. Of course, I don't say any of that to the guard. The wheel creaks when the soldier turns it. The door swings open, and both guards step aside in a hurry.
"Wondered when you would visit."
Five sits cross-legged on the floor of his padded cell and smiles at me and Nine. His arms are secured in a straitjacket, his legs in a pair of loose-fitting pajama pants, and he's barefoot. The floor underneath him is like one big cushion. There's nothing in this room for Five to touch that would allow him to activate his externa. Worst-case scenario, he turns his skin to cotton. I didn't supervise Five's imprisonment. I wasn't really in an emotional state to worry about him. So Nine and Sam arranged this setup. Looking at the padded room, you'd think it was specifically designed to hold Five. Lucky for us, the spies who'd originally built this place were prepared for every possibility, including one of their number losing their mind in a post-apocalyptic scenario. Five's face is still bruised and swollen from where Nine decked him right after our battle on Liberty Island. In securing him down here, Sam and Nine even took away the grubby patch of gauze he'd been keeping over his eye. The empty socket stares at me.
"I need your help," I say.
The words leave a bitter taste in my mouth. Five cocks his head to the side so that his good eye is focused on me.
"You saved my life, John. I know you'll never trust me. Not after everything that's happened. But I'm at your service."
Next to me, Nine groans.
I want a barf.
Five turns to Nine.
You know, I accept responsibility for my actions, Nine. I know that what I did was misguided. But when will you accept your part?
My part?
Always running your goddamn mouth,
Five growls.
If you only shut up once in a while.
So my jokes turned you into a psychotic traitor?
Responds Nine. I notice his fists are clenched. He looks at me.
This is a stupid idea, John.
I shake my head. Look, when all this is over, if you two want to lock yourselves in a steel cage and work your shit out once and for all, that'll be fine with me. But right now, we can't waste any more time.
Nine frowns and falls silent. Five keeps on staring at me like he can see right through me. After a second, he clicks his tongue.
What a difference a day makes,
Five says. Then he addresses Nine like I'm not even in the room.
Yesterday, he was doing everything he could to keep us from killing each other. Remember? The Boy Scout? Now it's all changed.
He fixes me with a smile that looks almost proud.
I see that look in your eyes, John. You weren't ready before, but now you are.
Ready for what? I ask, inwardly kicking myself for how easily I took the bait.
For war,
Five replies.
Ready to do whatever's necessary to win. Maybe ready to do more than what's necessary, hmm?
He looks at Nine again.
You see it too, don't you? He's like us now. Bloodthirsty.
Nine doesn't immediately respond. He's got an uncertain look on his face, and I realize, despite his hatred for Five, what's just been said about me has struck a chord. How could I not be changed after what's happened? If I'm bloodthirsty, if I'm willing to do whatever it takes to end Cetricus Ra, well, I'm not ashamed of that. I ignore the entire exchange and look Five in his one eye. I need you to teach me to fly, I say. Five concentrates for a moment, and then he floats up from the cushioned floor, cross-legged and with his shaved head, hovering 4 feet off the ground. He looks like a twisted version of a monk.
This what you want?
He asks. I study the way he floats. It isn't enough. He frowns at me.
You've got the copycat legacy like Pittacus Lore, right? I saw what you did in New York with the new girl and her stone eyes. You just had to observe her legacy. So, observe.
It wasn't as simple as Five seems to think. First of all, I was desperate. That always seems to help when it comes to mastering legacies. I could also feel the power building when I tried to heal Daniela's headache. My Zimmick tapped directly into her budding legacy, and I could actually sense how it worked. I think that's why I was able to copy Marina's healing legacy without even knowing what I was doing, and why I was able to recreate Six's invisibility without too many problems. I've actually felt those legacies before, had them used on me, touched the power. Watching Five float around like a sociopathic Buddha isn't nearly hands-on enough. With Daniela, it was heat of the moment. Plus, I could sense how the legacy worked, I explained to Five. Staring at you isn't going to do me any good.
I've flown you around before,
Five reminds me.
Back on the first day we met? Don't you remember what it felt like?
Probably like being carried around by a chubby asshat,
Nine offers unhelpfully. Ignoring Nine, I close my eyes and try to recall what it was like flying with Five. The feeling of weightlessness, my legs dangling, the idea that he might drop me at any second. I look down at my feet,
unsurprised to find them still on the floor. I remember what it was like to be carried, I say. That's a lot different than actually propelling myself up in the air.
Five gets a thoughtful look.
It's almost nostalgic. Not something I've ever seen before on his usually rage-filled face.
Flying is a lot like telekinesis,
Five says after a moment.
Like how you visualize an object you want to move floating through the air. How you imagine making that happen, and it happens? You guys did that crap a million times just like me, right?
Nine and I both murmur agreement.
Well, imagine you're doing that to your own body,
Five continues. He jerks against his straitjacket suddenly and frowns.
He was trying to spread his arms and forgot that they were strapped tight across his chest.
Hold out your arms and imagine strings underneath them pulling you up.
Like a puppet, Nine says.
Like an actor in a show,
Five answers, glowering.
Rising up above the stage, graceful.
Even lamer, Nine says.
Try it, John,
Five says gently.
Hold out your arms. Imagine you're safely attached to the wires. Imagine your telekinesis can manipulate those wires, and then stop imagining and do it.
Even though I'm not entirely comfortable taking coaching from Five, I still extend my arms from my sides. I concentrate and try to imagine strings looped around me, connecting me to the ceiling just like Five said. I pull at those strings with my telekinesis. I picture my feet leaving the ground, my body weightless on the air. And then it happens. Something clicks, and I feel my sneakers lose contact with the floor. It's only a few inches at most, but still, it's happening.
Easy now,
Five says, his voice a whisper.
That's good. Focus on keeping your body straight. Keep pulling yourself up on your strings.
Even as Five says this, I can't help but glance down at the floor to check on my progress. There's a foot of empty space beneath where my feet dangle, and seeing that is somehow completely disorienting. My instinct is to wave my arms like I'm losing my balance. Suddenly, I'm pitched forward, still floating, but horizontal now, facing the floor.
Focus!
Five snaps.
Remember the strings!
The yelling doesn't help. I do remember my imaginary strings, but instead of gently pulling on them to straighten back up, I give them a frustrated mental tug. I rocket upwards, feel my spine smack hard against the ceiling, and then fall onto my face. Lucky for me, the floor of Five's room is padded. Behind me, I hear Nine trying to stifle laughter. I push myself onto my hands and knees and glare at him.
You could have caught me.
Nine grins and mimes, waving his arms in the air for balance.
Oh, man, it was too good. I wasn't thinking.
I stand back up. Five still effortlessly floats in front of me. At least he doesn't think my failure is hilarious like Nine does.
It's a start,
he says, and shrugs through his straitjacket.
I don't recommend practicing where there's a ceiling, by the way. I learn mostly over water, so the falls don't hurt so much.
How long? I ask. How long did it take you to master?
Five snorts.
It's not like shooting fireballs, John. It's more like learning to walk again. It took me months.
I shake my head. I don't have months. I need to fly up to one of the warships as soon as possible. Five raises an eyebrow.
Well, now, that sounds interesting.
You aren't invited,
Nine says quickly. Five sighs.
If you're determined to do it yourself, there's another training technique we could try.
What is it?
I've barely gotten the question out when Five hits me in the stomach with his shoulder. The air goes out of me immediately. He's like a cannonball. He doesn't have arms to grasp me, so it's all force that keeps my midsection pressed firmly to Five's shoulder. We careen straight out the door of his cell right past Nine, who doesn't react quickly enough. The Marines outside scream in surprise. We let our guard down for 1 second, and this is what happens. How stupid could we be? Five slams me up against the wall opposite his cell, high up, so the top of my head actually brushes the ceiling. I hear shouts from the soldiers, hear their weapons cock.
Don't! Nine shouts. You'll hit John!
Five flies away from me, and I start to slide down the wall, but he isn't letting me go. He's just getting a better position. As I fall, his legs wrap around my chest. One of my arms is pinned against my side in his leg lock. The other I manage to squeeze free. I fire up my lumen on my free hand and grasp at Five's leg, trying to pry myself loose. I burn through the front of his pajama pants, hear the skin on his leg crackle and pop, and then whoosh! All of Five's skin becomes fire, his legacy kicking in. Even though I'm immune to being burned, I still jerk backward, surprised. The straitjacket burns clean off him, fiery shreds falling to the hallway floor beneath us. Now he doesn't need his legs to grasp me. He reaches down and wraps his flame-covered hands around my throat.
Thanks for the fire, John, you predictable, arrogant prick!
He flies us up, hard, and slams me against the ceiling. Then immediately back down, dashing me against the floor. Nine leaps at us, and Five swings me around like a human shield. I hear Nine grunt as my legs hit him across the side of the head. Then I'm rising up again, Five flying me down the hall at great speed.
That first time I took you flying? God, how bad I wanted to drop you! You don't even know. Time to make up for that.
It's dizzying. We go slamming through doors, into empty cells, into new hallways where panicked shouts greet us. Five takes every opportunity to throttle me against a wall or a ceiling or the floor. It's hard to tell sometimes just which surface my ribs are cracking against. It's so disorienting. I catch a glimpse of Nine sprinting along behind us and realize that he's running on the walls, using his anti-gravity legacy to keep from having to plow through any bystanders. Five must see him too, because he doubles back, and we streak towards Nine like a meteor. Nine has to dive out of the way to avoid getting crushed or burned, and before he can recover, Five has zipped us around another corner. I'm on my own here. Thanks to being fireproof, I'm not concerned with Five's literally flaming skin. It's the way his hands are crushing my windpipe that I really have to worry about. Every time Five dashes me against a new surface, his grip slackens a bit, and it gives me a chance to breathe. With the way he's buffeting me around, it's a constant struggle to keep getting oxygen.
Beloved leader came to me in a dream! Five shouts right into my face. The socket of his missing eye is completely filled with fire. He said he'd forgive me if I told him how to find you. I told him I'd do even better and kill you myself.
A snarl of rage builds in my aching throat. Enough! I pound both of my fists down on Five's forearms in an effort to break his grip. He grunts but doesn't let go of my neck. We go careening into a wall, then the ceiling, always with me cushioning the hit for Five. I lean my head back, make sure my eyes are aimed directly at Five, and let loose Daniela's stone vision. He's too fast. As soon as the beam leaves my eyes, Five gets one of his hands up to block me from blasting him full in the face. That's one less hand around my neck, though. Five lets out a creepy little laugh as his hand turns to stone, then mashes that newly leaden appendage right into my face. He keeps the pressure on, covering my eyes so that I can't get off another shot with the stone vision. Still, it's an opening. I can breathe now with only one of Five's hands holding my throat. Not only that, but I've managed to gain some leverage. I grab him around the neck and twist, spinning us so that he takes the brunt of the next fall. We crash into something. It must be the floor. I still can't see, and I immediately make sure that I keep Five pinned. In control now, all my weight thrown against Five, I throttle him against the floor over and over. His stone hand drops away from my eyes, and I can see the look of pain cross his face. The flames covering his body blink out, leaving behind fragile, normal skin. I don't stop. I keep slamming him. Now it's Five gasping for breath.
John! John! Look down!
He manages to wheeze out. Another trick, probably. But there's something about the way Five says it. All that malice gone from his voice. I glance down and see the floor. 15 feet below us. I'm not slamming Five against the ground at all. I'm pressing him against the ceiling. I'm flying. In complete control.
You said heat of the moment,
Five croaks.
I thought some motivation might help you learn. Do it by instinct.
I don't know what to say. I let a deep breath whistle through my teeth and my fury dissipates while still holding Five against the ceiling. Slowly, in control now, I float us down to the ground. I glance around. We're in a hallway in the infirmary section of the base. It's all but deserted over here. Distantly, I hear footsteps racing down a nearby hall. Probably 9 and the soldiers trying to catch up. There were better ways to do that, I say, turning to Five. I ignore the fact that he's completely naked, all his clothing having burned off when he turned his skin into fire.
Can't argue with results,
Five replies, hunched over. He holds up the hand I turned to stone in front of his face. I can tell by the way his arm muscles flex that he's trying to move his fingers, but isn't able.
This feels weird.
Five turns his entire body to stone to match his hand. When he turns back to normal, the stone hand stays the same. He frowns.
Shit! Is this permanent?
I don't know, I tell him. I could try healing it.
Please do,
he says and holds out his hand. I take Five's arm and let my healing legacy pour into it. It takes a little more effort than normal. My legacy has to work through the cold stone and find some live tissue to rebuild. Eventually, the stone starts to crumble away, revealing smooth skin underneath.
Maybe just leave my pinky,
Five says, suddenly like an idea just occurred to him.
I don't need my pinky.
I make a face. He wants me to leave his finger so he'll always be able to turn his body to stone. I shake my head. Not going to happen.
Come on, John,
he says and grins at me. There's blood in his teeth.
Don't you trust me?
In answer, I heal his hand the rest of the way. I don't let go of his arm just yet. When we were fighting, you said Cetricus Ra came to you in a dream. Was that just you trying to fire me up?
No, that happened,
Five states.
I didn't accept his offer, though. I'm done believing what that old bastard says.
Before I can press Five further, 9 barrels around the corner in a full sprint. With my enhanced hearing, I can make out another dozen sets of running feet a few seconds behind him. I can also hear the telltale clicks of automatic weapons. I immediately hold up my hands in 9's direction and put myself between him and 5. After 5's stunt, I don't want this situation to get any more out of hand. I'm all right, I shout. It was just a misunderstanding. 9 skids to a stop, his fists balled. He puffs out his cheeks with exertion, then raises one eyebrow, looking past me. Behind me, Five grunts in surprise.
John?
Five manages. I turn around to find Five standing as still as a statue. He's barely even breathing. An icicle hovers in the air right in front of his face. The point glints in the brightly lit hallway, sharp as a dagger. The frozen shard is a hair away from Five's remaining eye. Marina stands a few feet behind Five, far enough back that he wouldn't be able to reach out and grab her. Her dark hair is a tangled mess, matted to one side of her face. She looks like she just woke up, except for the eyes. Those are wide and glaring, focused on Five. Marina, easy, I start to say. She doesn't even hear me.
What did I tell you, Five?
Marina asks, her voice cold.
What did I say would happen if I ever saw you again?